We interrupt this program to bring you special live coverage of the United Nations Security Council meeting on the crisis in Iran.
Good evening. The United Nations Security Council is gathering and preparing to go into formal session on the crisis in Iran, where it is expected that the first speaker will be American UN Ambassador Donald McHenry. Now, after that, we are informed speakers from Western Europe, most of them NATO allies of the United States, will make policy statements on behalf of their governments. The Security Council is expected to end with the American and allied positions in tonight's opening session. Now, joining me with tonight's live coverage of that session is news analyst David Schoengren. David, as we await the start of the session, any thoughts?
Well, one thought is that I'm glad to hear you say that we expect to hear these things because the agenda can change at the United Nations. Whatever happens, we'll endeavor to follow it for you and to clarify it for you. I was most impressed earlier today when the chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Frank Church, made a statement saying that the United Nations itself is now on trial. We've been saying the same thing on this program for some days. The reason, I think, is really quite apparent. The challenge is not to the United States alone. The delegate of Iran is not even attending this session. He has snubbed the United Nations. Iran is guilty, or at least being charged with being guilty, of a violation of international law. And it simply doesn't even bother to defend itself. The leaders of Iran have already said that they won't accept orders from anybody, that they're going to put our hostages on trial unless the Shah is returned, which means they have already openly defied the United Nations. However, that defiance does not become a legal defiance until the United Nations actually gives them an order, and they refuse to follow that order. And that is really the purpose of the Security Council sessions that we're about to go through this weekend. It is expected, again expected, not sure, that this will end up with some kind of a resolution calling upon Iran to free the hostages. Now, Steve, if Iran does not do that, then legally, at last, she is in open defiance of the United Nations.
One thing I wanted to ask you, David, is there any precedent for this sort of thing in the United Nations?
Oh, yes.
Has this ever happened before?
Well, there is precedent for nations defying the United Nations.
Yes, that
has happened before. There's no precedent for what Iran has done. There's no precedent for a government actually condoning terrorism and refusing to protect diplomatic envoys. That is unique in all of human history. That hasn't happened. But the United Nations has been challenged a great many times, and it has risen to that challenge upon a number of occasions. This, however, seems to be the most serious because it is the most flagrant example, and because a great superpower, in fact the greatest, the United States, is the one that is at the bar of justice calling for justice. The United States, you see, is the most important supporter of the United Nations. We are not only the host government to the World Organization, but we actually pay more dues than anybody else. We are, in fact, a solid bulwark and have been from the beginning. But for the last 10 years or so, we have been treated rather shabbily. The United States is in the minority in the World Organization, and, of course, there's no reason for us to complain about that. We are a minority in the population of the world. But at least, even as a minority, given our power, given our support, given the dues that we pay, and simply given ordinary justice, the United States has a right to demand more from the United Nations than it has been getting. And this is going to be the trial of strength for the UN.
Now, let me ask you this, David. The government of Iran, such as it is, continues to more and more isolate itself. From my own point of view, I don't understand how this isolation can help them. I mean, they are isolating themselves from the world.
Well, that's quite correct. If it helps them at all, according to most observers familiar with Iran and familiar with the Ayatollah Khomeini and his particular type of religious sect, they point out that in this Shiite sect, which is a minority sect of Islam, of the Muslim religion, particularly at this time of the year, in their particular holy day that they have been celebrating, there is a tendency to seek martyrdom. Mm-hmm. Now, when you're isolated, when you defy the greatest power in the world, the United States, when the rest of the world turns on you, you have achieved a form of martyrdom. Maybe what's being useful, Steve, if I may say so, is that it's helping keep the fervor of his revolution at fever pitch.
I think we should also make the distinction that I think a lot of people may have the impression that the people in Iran, the people of Iran, are Arabs.
Yeah.
Whereby they're not.
No, no, they're Persians. They're not an Arab people. I think we must make another distinction, which the President of the United States has already made and certainly bears constant repetition. And that is the United States, the people of the United States, the government of the United States have no quarrel with Islam. We have no quarrel with Muslims. We respect their religion. And we do not identify all of them with the Ayatollah Khomeini.
I believe we're about to begin the session. I thought I heard a gavel tap.
Well,
there's the Ambassador McHenry.
The 2,175th meeting of the Security Council is called to order. The agenda for this meeting is before the Council in document S Agenda 2175. Unless I hear any objection, I shall consider the agenda adopted. I wish to inform the Council that the Chargé d'Affaires of the Permanent Mission of Iran to the United Nations, Mr. Jamal Shemirani, officially informed the outgoing President of the Council yesterday that, on instructions of this government, Iran does not intend to be present at this evening's meeting. The Security Council will now resume its consideration of the item on the agenda. The first speaker inscribed on my list is the representative of the United States, to whom I give the floor.
Mr. President, 27 days ago, 63 Americans, as well as personnel of other nationalities, were seized when armed, disciplined group of demonstrators invaded the United States Embassy in Tehran. 18 of those captured have been released. At least 50 Americans remain captive. As with diplomats everywhere, the individuals who were taken hostage are entitled to the protection of the government of Iran by the most solemn commitment nations can give, the sovereign pledge of governments by treaty and international obligation. Governments, of course, retain the right to require that foreign diplomatic personnel leave their soil. But every standard of international behavior, whether established by practice, by ethics, by treaty, or by common humanity, supports the principle that the personnel of a diplomatic mission and diplomatic property are inviolate. Even in the darkest moments of relationships between countries, the security and well-being of diplomatic personnel has been respected. Iran asks that its grievances be heard and acted upon. Yet Iran and the authorities who speak for it are violating the most basic obligation of nations. They hold hostage the very people and facilitate whose job it is to facilitate communications, whose job it is to resolve differences and lead to understanding and agreement among nations. None of us, whatever our differences on other issues, can ignore the implications for all of us of this event. Nor can the world ignore that these diplomatic representatives are being held under degrading conditions. They are threatened, kept bound, isolated, not allowed to speak, denied mail. Even their whereabouts are uncertain. All of us at this table are also diplomatic representatives of our countries, charged with the same duties and protected by the same laws and rules of conduct as those now held captive in Tehran. It is for all of us to speak up, to demand their release, and to insist upon basic conditions of humanity for their care pending their release, including daily visitation by impartial observers. Many members of the United Nations, including some of the members of this council, have had ambassadors murdered, diplomatic personnel injured, embassy facilities destroyed. On each occasion, the delicate framework of the international community has been harmed, but efforts were made to heal the wounds. The situation in Tehran has a feature unlike other assaults on the diplomatic ties that bind our world. In Iran, the government itself defends the violence which holds diplomats hostage. Such a situation is intolerable. The United States insists that its diplomatic personnel be released and its diplomatic premises be restored. These are not negotiable matters. The United States will hold the authorities in Iran fully responsible for the safety of the Americans now held captive. I speak today for hostages who are endangered by the frenzy and uncertainty of events, by the inhumane conditions under which they are held, and by the threat of the authorities in Iran to compound unjust acts through trials. Around the world, nations east and west, north and south, in individual and collective statements have expressed their opposition to this violation of international law and called for the immediate release of the hostages. We express our appreciation for this overwhelming expression of international concern and support in behalf of the principles that lie at the draft of civilized international behavior. In this spirit, the United States appreciates the fact that the President of the Security Council, speaking on behalf of members of this body, has twice urgently appealed for the release of the hostages. The President of the General Assembly has twice spoken eloquently in support of this plea. The Secretary General of the United Nations has worked unceasingly to resolve this crisis. There has not been, to date, a satisfactory response, and the hostages are still not free. We gather here to determine what more can be done. None of us is deaf to the passionate voices that speak of injustice, that cry out against past wrongs, and that ask for understanding. There is not a single grievance alleged or spoken in this situation that could not be heard in an appropriate forum. In addition, as we have said from the beginning, the United States remains ready, upon the release of the hostages, to discuss with the Iranian authorities the differences which exist between us and to seek their resolution. But no country can call for justice while at the same time denying it to the defenseless. No country can breach the most fundamental rules of the community of nations and at the same time expect that community to be helpful in the problems which it perceives for itself. In the simplest terms, no country can break and ignore the law while seeking its benefits. What is it that the world can agree upon, if not the protection and respect for those whom we appoint to represent our sovereignty and resolve our differences? How tragic for Iran, how tragic for the world, that the threats to peace are being driven to a new crescendo. The most powerful voices in Iran have encouraged violence in neighboring countries and condoned bloodshed rather than condemning it. In addition, totally unfounded charges, which can only inflame the situation, have been made against the United States with respect to the current crisis. The United States, in all the years of its history, has had a fundamental principle, the freedom of all people to worship as they choose. Out of this history and long association, we honor and respect the leaders and the nation of Islam. The principle of non-interference in the internal affairs of other nations is both a tenet of the United Nations and of the foreign policy of the United States, and that includes, of course, respect for the territorial integrity, political independence, and sovereignty of Iran. We respect the right of the people of Iran to determine their own future through institutions of their own choosing, and all of us must accept their decisions. The President of the United States, speaking for a unified and determined nation, has made it clear that we are seeking a peaceful resolution in this conflict. And so, in this spirit, in an effort to heal wounds of the past, the United States has turned to the Security Council and the General Assembly. In this spirit, the United States has begun proceedings in the International Court of Justice. There is in the United States a unity of purpose, a disciplined sensitivity to the needs of peace, a determination to search out for a peaceful means to bring this dispute to a just conclusion, and also a determination to do what must be done to protect our fellow citizens and the rule of law. That unity of purpose is shared by all Americans. But make no mistake, beneath that discipline is a seething anger which Americans properly feel as they witness on daily television new threats and outrages against our fellow citizens. Mr. President, the hostages must be freed. Thank you.
Okay, we have David Schoenbrunn with us. We're going to at least raise or discuss some of the issues that were raised by some of the 14 nations that spoke tonight, David. It seemed to me that overall there was a unanimous support from countries that are neutral, countries that are adversaries, but all unanimously supporting the United States position tonight. What was your impression?
Oh, quite definitely. There were a couple of nuances, and some people always had an axe of their own that they wanted to hone up. But by and large, it was really fulsome support from around the world for the United States, from Europe, from Africa, from Latin America, from Asia.
We, of particular interest in the United States anyway, were interested in the remarks by our United States Ambassador, Donald McHenry. What about his remarks?
Well, he reiterated the policy statements that President Carter had laid down, and he did so very forcefully, and it was really quite impressive. He recalled what had been said previously, but said it very well, that in the darkest moments of conflicts between nations, the immunity of envoys has always been respected in world history. But Iran is violating that most basic obligation of nations. He then pointed out the irony of the fact that they are holding hostage the very people whose mission it is to establish communications with other countries, the very people who could negotiate the grievances that Iran says they have are the people that they're holding hostage. They're therefore blocking themselves. Mr. McHenry pointed out that he insists, he didn't appeal, he didn't ask, he demanded, insists was the word he used, that our personnel be released and our premises restored, and he said solemnly, this is not negotiable. The governor of Iran, he said, as the president said, will be held responsible for its acts. He then went on to temper his remarks by saying that we are sensitive to the grievances that the people of Iran may have. But he pointed out that these grievances can be heard in appropriate forums. We are ready, he said. We of the United States are ready to discuss our differences with Iran. But, Mr. McHenry pointed out, no country can call for justice while denying it to individuals. No country can breach the law and ask to benefit from the law. He went on to say, and this is quite important, that freedom of worship is a fundamental principle of the American Democratic Republic. We honor, we respect Islam, as we do all religions. We respect the rights of the people of Iran to choose their own system of government. And we are seeking a peaceful solution to this conflict. We've already begun proceedings in the International Court of Justice, at the General Assembly, at the Security. We've done absolutely everything. And Mr. McHenry said there is a unity of purpose in this country. But then came a solemn warning. I'll quote his words. There is a seething anger below the surface in the hearts and guts of the American people. And he said these hostages must be freed. It was a strong statement from our ambassador, Steve.
David, one of the things that I've noticed in any case was that most of the speakers, most from the member nations, echoed a lot of what Ambassador McHenry said, yet I'm sure you must have picked up some important distinctions there.
There were some important distinctions and interesting ones. One came from Portugal. Portugal pointed out that this is not just a conflict with a great power like the United States, but that the principle of the inviolability of diplomatic envoys is a principle of law which has been put there to protect small nations, to protect poor nations and weak nations. And every poor, weak nation in the world is endangered tonight because of what Iran has done. That was an interesting point from Portugal. Then there was another one from Gabon, which struck me. He was the only one who struck this note, the ambassador from Gabon, because he referred to the Islamic religion and to the Quran. And he said, even under Islamic law, there is a provision for the respect of all envoys, including non-Muslim envoys. That was an interesting note. I also saw with myself some irony and listened to the representative of the Soviet Union piously declaring that the Soviet Union respects the rights of all peoples and doesn't interfere in the internal affairs of other countries while sitting next to delegates from Czechoslovakia, Hungary, and Poland, and other countries in which Russia has interfered. But I'd like to point out to the American public something very interesting that most people have forgotten if they ever knew it. The very first major interference in the rights and independence and integrity of Iran came from Russia.
Yes.
1945, they set up a puppet communist regime in Azerbaijan, and they were driven out after a Security Council meeting by a very feisty American president, Harry Truman, who said, get out, and they got out.
Listen, I should mention at this point that we did have some technical difficulties with our feed from the United Nations. But apparently we really didn't miss much of anything. That session has adjourned. One thing I want to ask you. Many citizens in the United States particularly express no confidence in the United Nations as a body. Now, when we listen to the members speak, they are speaking a diplomatic language which the average person really doesn't understand. What would you say to them? What has the UN done tonight?
Well, the UN has offered, at least in words, support for the American demand. But I think the American people would be right to still be a little mistrustful because most of them didn't use the word demand. Most of the ambassadors used the word appeal. They're still appealing to Iran. The time has come to stop appealing to Iran and tell Iran what to do. I think what the American people really expect and what may decide the future of the United Nations itself is whether all these speeches are over tonight, tomorrow night, maybe even Monday for all I know, will they take some kind of action? It's one thing to call for respect for international law. It's another thing to apply international law. Will there be a resolution demanding that Iran free the hostages? And if Iran doesn't do that, will the United Nations, which it can do, apply sanctions and tell all the peoples of the world and countries of the world not to deal with Iran? Will they expel Iran from the United Nations? This is what the people of the United States are looking for and waiting for.
David, I have two items here that I'm going to read, the second one of which I want you to comment on in just a moment. The first being that the Secretary General, Kurt Waldheim, told reporters that he has received renewed assurances from Iran that the American hostages in Tehran were safe and that they are protected. He said he received that assurance through the foreign minister of Sri Lanka, who talked with Iran's new foreign minister yesterday and flew to New York today. The second item, this is the eve of a very important referendum in Iran. Citizens are voting on the Ayatollah Khomeini's new Islamic constitution, and there are about, I'm told, according to this UPI copy, about 20 opposition groups are boycotting that referendum. And the report goes on to say that they are reaching Tehran. These reports indicate that in one city, about 250 people destroyed ballot boxes and took the local governor hostage. Even so, Khomeini appears assured of a large voter turnout. Now, what does that suggest to you?
Well, I think it reflects what we all know has been happening, and that Iran is living through a period of anarchy. The Ayatollah Khomeini is a kind of a spiritual and emotional image for a great many Iranians, but obviously not for all Iranians. There are a number of ethnic groups which living in Iran who are not Persian, not Farsi. There are Kurds, there are Turkmens of all kinds. The Kurds would like to be free. There are also 60,000 mullahs who are not all of them loyal to the Ayatollah Khomeini. There are other ayatollahs who have ambitions
Isn't
of their own.
Most of the power is in the mullahs?
Yeah, in the mullahs. And you see what's so interesting, you're quite right to bring this up, Steve. These mullahs are all through the countryside, not just in Tehran. They may form as many as 5,000-6,000 individual power centers. We don't know who really controls Iran. It certainly isn't Khomeini himself. The Revolutionary Council has great strength, to be sure, but that country is fragmented, living in anarchy, and that's another reason why it's so very difficult to deal with them.
Well, in light of this report, then, and the voting, does this put any kind of extra pressure on the UN?
Possibly. I think that the pressure on the UN, no matter what else happens, is that the UN, even more than the United States, has been defied by a member country which has broken the most sacred and ancient of traditions. And the UN, as Senator Church said today, is on trial.
Okay. Thank you. We, as always, welcome your unique perspective.
Thank you.
Now, one of our Action News reporters, Jeff Kamen, has spent a lot of time at the United Nations during this Iranian crisis. We've had reports with particular interest on the Secretary General, Kurt Waldheim. His report tonight will include him and the congressional delegation that came to the UN tonight. Jeff.
Steve, five members of Congress were at the UN Security Council tonight, among them the chairman of the Foreign Relations Committees in both the House and the Senate. Frank Church, the Idaho Democrat who runs the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, was asked at a news conference if he thinks the Security Council's deliberations will ultimately turn out to be nothing but a waste of time. Here's how he answered that question.
I would certainly hope that that does not prove to be the case. The facts are that the United Nations is anything but an instrumentality of the United States. And even the most cursory examination of the votes that have been taken in the United Nations in the past few years on any number of issues will bear me out. The UN is no tool of the United States, but the world community has an interest in the preservation of peace. And I think for that reason, since it was for such a purpose that the United Nations was established in the first place, that the UN itself is on trial as to its effectiveness. And that too must be taken into account by the Security Council and by the General Assembly and by all those who have membership in this organization. The UN, in a sense, is on trial.
And so Secretary General of the United Nations, Kurt Waldheim, is clearly the man on the international diplomatic hotspot tonight, and he knows it.